And again, I would have to do the research. I think that might come back to a 10. I'm not sure, but it's a little bit different. So I think there's clearly something interesting in the taxonomy name, Tabernanth iboga. But anyhow, pulling back, Jason, is there anything that we should ask that we haven't?
Well, how long does a session last for? And how often do people do it more than once?
Again, that's case by case. For me, it lasted 10 days, but I was taking it like every day for 10 days. Most people don't do that. I wanted to make sure all that garbage was kicked out of my system for good. So I went as hard as I could. I actually don't recommend that for anyone. It works for me, though.
Is it a nightmare memory or something else?
I have more clear memories from my first Ibogaine trip than I do of yesterday in real life. It doesn't happen for everyone, but a different reality materialized in front of me at a certain point when I was taking Ibogaine. And I spent what I thought were weeks to months in different decades throughout the 1900s, talking to so many different people about so many different things, learning about all different types of substances. Specifically, it was teaching me about the dangers of substances and just showing me examples like a storybook of different people's lives and how which drug affected them in which way. And I was able to see it like a movie, and I got to play a ton of different characters and roles. And it was just such a life-changing experience. When I came out of it, I was genuinely confused on what was real and what wasn't. And that might scare some people, but that's why you have a sitter to tell you you're not flying planes to deliver tobacco to California in the 1950s. You're right here. But it's just fascinating. I can't believe what I experienced. The first thing that I experienced in terms of hallucination was when a new reality kind of materialized in front of me. And I don't know what this means. I'm just shooting the shit, just bringing this up. I still haven't been able to figure it out. But there were like four guys like waiting for me almost, and they were on a boardwalk. This was clearly the early 1900s, by the way. It looked almost like Atlantic City or something. And they were on the boardwalk, and they were all looking in my direction, and I had appeared in front of them. And three of them looked horrified. Three of them absolutely, like, they just saw me appear and it freaked them out. But the one guy in the middle looked so welcoming and happy and almost anticipated seeing me. And this is what he said to me. He put his arm around me and he said, "You were born in the slit of a lid of an inkling of time." And I don't know what that means, but that's what he said to me. And then I started working with these guys. Like, it was a real life, you know, we were shipping alcohol and tobacco and just doing all these crazy things. So I don't think any drug can do that to you. I don't. And it was more tangible and real than anything I've ever experienced. So, I mean, it's 100% spiritual and case by case basis for each person. And I think that can happen even without Ibogaine if your intentions are right. If your faith is high and your intentions are sound and good and true, then the world is your oyster. You know, it can be. Anyway.
I think, Jason, I would add what I added when we did the ayahuasca episodes, which I do. I've never done it, and I've never done it for a reason, which is my own. But there's an interesting dichotomy going on here. With the ayahuasca, I have always said, don't think you're going to have some spiritual epiphany unless you have a real spiritual master to guide you in and prepare you. What I have seen so much of in Southern California is people are doing this to get high, and then they act like they're spiritually using it when really they're just getting high. And so this is one of the drugs I've chose not to do. But the thing about ayahuasca is there's so many people that use it now and have been to South America and other places to learn how to try to be a good spiritual guide into this. And so that brings us around to Ibogaine. I had never even heard of it. So I would say a similar thing. Like I said about ayahuasca, be careful. Are there people around who can guide you into this and make sure you're doing it correctly? That's my feeling. What's your feeling, Jason?
Right. I think you absolutely would want to have some sort of guidance. This thing sounds super intense, almost like you're on some sort of Star Trek holodeck situation where you're living out almost an entirely other life with experiences, emotions, feelings, all that sort of thing. So, yeah.
Yes.
You know, with psychoactive substances, and that was a big deal in Southern California in my lifetime, not just LSD, but mushrooms and other things that people look to go on a trip. So they said, what I noticed is some of the nicest people you will ever meet in your life have a nightmare of a time once they've done it. And on the flip side, I've seen people that are not that nice use it and have the exact opposite experience. But what I do know is I don't think it's for everybody. And just doing it because you can, I think that's a mistake. And that brings us back around. How much, you know, I asked it earlier, in this country, how much do you feel like Ibogaine is being used by the subculture, if that's even the right word?
I don't know. It's being slept on. It's, I don't know, maybe 1%, if that. That's probably generous.
How much information do you feel like you were able to find? Clearly, you made a connection somewhere. And clearly, you went into this with some idea of how to do it.
There's so much information online. A lot of it is just people sharing stories. But there's been so many good books written about Ibogaine and Iboga.
Now you're talking my language. That's a great thing. So books have been written on this.
A lot of them. Yeah. A new one just came out, which is really good. It's called The Root of All Healing. And that book's about Iboga, and it's really great. And I talk about a lot of things happened in my Iboga dreams, I call them, that I don't feel the need to bring up to people or talk about because I haven't seen a good interpretation or reason or shared experience from someone else that I've read. But once I do, then I more apt to talking about it.
Have you ever done ayahuasca or magic mushrooms, so-called magic mushrooms? And if you have, is there any similarity?
I've done those. I don't think ibogaine has any similarity with anything. I've heard the show you did that you had someone on talking about ayahuasca, and he said that ayahuasca was the female and that ibogaine is the male counterpart. And I thought that was a good way to describe it. And
oh, wow.
And the reason being is that ibogaine is a very confrontational thing. It's a very confrontational in terms of, hey, look, you did this wrong. You need to fix it. Like, or you need to adjust how you go forward in the future. Not many psychedelics make a priority of that. You know, you can have those moments and epiphanies and realization, but it's something else gets in the driver's seat with ibogaine. And it really, really guides you. It genuinely guides you without thoughts that lingering thoughts or things you don't want to think about. You don't even have a choice. Your intention is not there after you take it. You're just on a ride. So I don't think anyone would take it just to take it unless they didn't know at all what it was. And then they'd probably never take it again.
Well, you opened up by reminding me of that past episode. You've made me consider that maybe the people that are ayahuasca practitioners and have been trained must know something about this. To put the gender tag on it means that you know it at a pretty deep level to be able to make a statement. And I'd forgotten all about that. So is it possible that some of the, I don't know, what are we going to call them? The trained practitioners of ayahuasca have a good idea of ibogaine?
Yeah, I would say so. And there's probably more of them that do ayahuasca, because I'd say that it would be, I would compare that to more of a typical psychedelic experience. It's not typical. That's case by case basis too. But in terms of what you get out of it, it can just be a really pleasant, good experience. Every time though, with ibogaine, it will be a, we need to reprioritize your life type situation.
Well, there's a big difference between going out to party and get high and trying to spiritually achieve something. And at least within the ayahuasca community, we met, and I have been aware of people who have truly, their intent is that they want to use it to spiritually improve. And they've gone down, they've been trained. And so if they do know something about ibogaine, that's, to me, that's a big step up. It makes me less nervous because a lot of people make bad decisions when they're desperate. And that's a little bit nerve wracking when we talk about things like this, because addiction is no joke. It ruins your life. And then to get free of it is its own nightmare. But do you feel like the ibogaine, the powder that you were using, is it totally untouched? Is it just dried bark then crushed down?
Well, before we get into that, we're at the top of the hour here. On top of that, I'd like to add in for hour two, what specific culture or cultures this comes from and how it might be used on top of that.
Okay, so we're going to do the hour break. Let's open up with the idea Jason just expressed. And also, I'm interested to know, is this just harvested from nature, dried and crushed? But anyhow, that does bring us to the top of the hour for episode 379. James, please give your website information again.
It's www.groundedextracts.com.
Also, James' significant other, we were looking at, because she is also interested in natural births, and someone's taught me how to say it, and I've already forgotten. Is it midwifery? I keep messing that up. I'm sorry to all you folks out there if I mess that up, but I think people know what I mean. Anyhow, there's hour one of 379 covering a plant from Africa, as far as I understand, called ibogaine. It's very interesting to me. And at the end of the conversation, I was a little more relieved being reminded that one of the ayahuasca practitioners knew enough about it to give it a gender. Now it starts to feel like me, there's some expertise out there in the world of people who might know how to administer that. And the reason I say that is because people in desperate straits do desperate things. And that is not, that's rolling the dice from my point of view. Anyhow, join us for hour two at crow777radio.com, crrow777radio.com. The second hour is for members. And I'd like to wish you all a happy, healthy, and higher-minded new era. Cheers. All right, man, welcome back to the second hour of episode 379. Jason Lingren is back, and James from Grounded Extracts is with us. We've been talking about ibogaine, but during the last few minutes of hour one, James reminded me that during the ayahuasca episode, ibogaine was brought up. And at the time, I thought, how is it I haven't heard of this? I got to go learn about it. And I never did, and I forgot about it again. Needless to say, that will not happen again. I did a quick search online to see what's being published. The book that James mentioned is Iboga, The Root of All Healing. Believe it or not, it's right on Amazon. There's another one called Ibogaine Explained. There's a couple like Plants of the Gods. But what's more is I had some time to do a search, and I applied my natural reasoning, or at least my diaper wearing attempt to put natural reasoning from all that I've learned to the plant. Here's what I can tell you. The images lead me to believe that the root system is a rhizome, which is like running bamboo. It's got two paired fruits, which you can look up. They're orange. Orange is almost always typically associated with mind. As a matter of fact, orange has big use in Buddhism and other mind science-based spiritual traditions. But what's even more is the flower has five petals, and that's a whole thing on its own, but it is white and that kind of spiritually lifting pinkish, which is not far off what the ether color is represented. So this is all very interesting to me. And needless to say, I shot off an email to David Avocado Wolf. His significant other got back to me and said, David knows about it. So we're not going to have an episode again where I can't add much because I'm going to learn about this. And anyhow, welcome back, Jason.
And good afternoon.
Welcome back, James. Can you tell folks where they can find you?
Yeah, thank you, guys. www.groundedextracts.com.
Okay, perfect. I'm going to let people discover what's there for obvious reasons. When we do things like this, it's very interesting. But in the short time that I've had to try to catch up a little bit about Ibogaine, I've realized that there are a ton of people who know something about it. And as soon as I heard back from David Avocado Wolf, I thought that's fantastic. When people at his level begin to know a thing and they've paid attention to it, it's real. But what's more, and what I have learned, is if so-called indigenous peoples, and I'm not trying to be rude, I just don't know a better way to say it, are using a thing, it's the real deal. Indigenous tribes and others who are not tied to the local supermarket do not do things frivolously. So if they're putting a thing to use, I think it stands to reason that there is something important here. But we went into the break and I'm going to ask what I asked and then Jason's going to bring back what he asked. What I asked is, you've got a powder. Is it literally just the bark dried and crushed, or has it been processed in some way?
So the root bark itself is crushed and powdered and given ceremoniously, but there are two versions of Ibogaine above that they use for addiction. And what they're doing is they're isolating the alkaloids. So they're just removing some of the alkaloids and leaving some of them for HCL is one of them. And the other one is called TA or total alkaloid.
Are you suggesting that there's some spagyrics work to make tinctures and other things?
100%. There is some spagyrics going on when they make the addiction breaking versions of Ibogaine.
Almost makes me wonder if Phoenix Aurelius has anything to do with this. But Jason, you were going to ask, oh, I'm sorry, did you finish? So basically the powder is just dried and crushed.
Correct, except for the impactful drug addiction stopping versions of Ibogaine, which is HCL and TA. And those are just isolated alkaloids. They're not messed with or changed from the original.
So just so folks know, if it's a spagyric activity, I don't really think it would be fair to call it synthetic on any level. You're working within the scope of nature and you may be breaking things apart and taking certain parts, but at no point are chemicals or other methods used to change what nature has made. And Jason, you went out of the last hour with a question that I've already forgot.
So what culture or cultures would Ibogaine be coming from, and what would their applications be for such cultures?
Sure. So Iboga comes from the West African spiritual practice, which is named Bwiti. It's B-W-I-T-I. And they are a group of people in Africa where the entire village and culture surrounds the Iboga tree. And what they do is they have ceremonies on a scheduled basis for the entire community to take part in sipping Iboga or taking a spoonful of it. And it's supposed to provide herbal healing for most, but for the youngest of the cultures, they use Iboga to see if the children are ready for man or womanhood yet. So around anywhere from age 7 to 13, depending on the child and their culture, is when they give their first Ibogaine dose to their youth.
How old?
Anywhere from 7 years old to 13 years old.
Well, I've often mentioned The Gods Must Be Crazy, one of my favorite movies. And in that, Kalahari Bushmen are introduced. And it's not horribly done. And it was made by very few people. It's not a typical Hollywood flick. There's actually another part. There's a movie that was made after Gods Must Be Crazy too. But that first one is one of my favorites. And what I already knew to be true before I see the movie is that tribe had no words for things like murder or violence. And in the movie, a Coke bottle introduces these things that they don't have words for. Would that be similar to the Bwiti tribes? And by the way, is this so-called pygmy tribes?
Maybe considered by some. I'm not really sure.
I did a lookup and Wicca Never Tell Me the Truthpedia claimed that they were. But like I said, I would need to delve much deeper. I'll take Wiki at its word for about 2 seconds and then I'll go do real research unless I'm looking for a date or something. But do you know much about the Bwiti tradition? Are there words in that culture for violence or murder?
I don't know about their words, but I do know that their murder rate is 0%. They don't have one recorded murder in their cultural history. So I think that speaks volumes of it.
There's nothing, in my view, there is not a single thing that could speak louder than that statement. If that's correct, that means so much to me. And a so-called culture like that, and there are other examples in our world, I know they are because I went and looked for them, are using a thing from nature. There's got to be an important reason for it. And I think what's going to happen, James, is on the tail of this, I may try to delve a little bit further with some plant experts and others to try to get in. But, you know, we opened up with the idea that all the drugs we listed could be treated in some way or have been. So the idea here is that Iboga has been used by someone somewhere to treat every one of the drugs I listed to include alcohol and tobacco.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a hell of a thing.
Yeah, it is. And there are things that blends we make that contain alkaloids that are in iboga, because they're in a bunch of different things in Africa, but the Tabernanthe iboga tree is the chief among them. And so these other plants like voacanga, things that are legal, you can get and process, not process, but crush down and ingest as a powder. Same thing using the root bark. So that's what we've been doing and trying to create the best concoctions that can meet you where ibogaine leaves you. And also just to help people, whether they've done ibogaine or not. But anyways, there's kind of an afterglow after you take ibogaine. And that's when you want to implement the aftercare before the noribogaine wears off in your system. So right away, if someone did ibogaine, we immediately give them something we may call best earth. And it's a combination of reishi, chaga, chlorella, and voacanga. And it's packed with amino acids. We talked about the other day how important that is to rebuild your body physically while doing mentally, because iboga can make you kind of forget, not forget to eat, but you don't really desire to eat or drink too much. So you want to remember to remain very healthy afterwards. So that's what I tried to do, is put together the best version of what had helped me quit smoking, quit opiates, quit Adderall, and replace benzodiazepines. And now just this one best earth, the capsules we make called best earth, can help with all of these, with Adderall, benzos. In our family, at least, that's what they've helped with. I don't know if that would be true for anyone else, but I put a lot of work into collecting what I can and get it to people who can't afford ibogaine or don't know how to seek ibogaine, but still want the similar spiritual alkaloids that can enhance their ability to prioritize what they really want in life.
All right. Well, let me just outline. I've jumped onto your website for about the third or fourth time. Under the shop, there are CBD oil that you made. Kratom, which is actually one I haven't heard of, gold vein. I think it's Mitrogena is the species.
Yeah,
elderberry serum. And I've actually been reading within the last year a lot about how important elderberry is. Stinging nettle. Stinging nettle is a plant that was always interesting to me. And I knew it was supposedly some of the right is related to cannabis. But the ones that I see here that are an invasive species, they launched me on my whole, how do I think about a plant based on its complexity and its color? That was stinging nettle. But you make something from stinging nettle and you have chaga mushroom extract. The best yep. earth, which you've mentioned, banju, which I'll let you cover, turmeric and black pepper, and reishi mushroom extract. There's all kinds of lip balm, hemp, liquid kratom. Oh, there's another page here. Hold on. I didn't see that earlier. You have an elderberry lemonade. That's interesting. And red clover. Anyhow, people can go check that out. But I'm guessing of the thing that we've talked the most about here, that would relate to your good earth.
Correct. Yeah. Best earth. Good. It's good too, though. It's good too. And yeah. And that's why I called it that, because it's the best things. You've had people on that talked about how amazing reishi and chaga are. And chlorella is absolutely essential if you're taking ibogaine. So that's in there too. And any of the ibogaine alkaloids, which would be in there. Ibogaine isn't in this, but voacanga is, that contains the same, some of the same alkaloids. And it's helped people in my family stop using OxyContin, Xanax, and Adderall. And me personally, I've gotten rid of all those using these and more. And it does it by just helping you prioritize what you want, which I call habit control.
I was going to bring up a thing that Jason and I covered in one of our past episodes when I was doing the research on the pharmaceutical side. There was a claim, and it was more in one place, that when OxyContin was first created, they knew it was, I don't know, 10, 20, a lot more addictive. And the way they actually marketed it was to convince the people who make the decisions that it was the first non-addictive painkiller. And actually OxyContin, you could probably point a lot of the blame at the maker and that particular substance as key in the opioid epidemic that swept across the world. But for my part, I saw that handed out like candy for, I don't even know, man, feels like 20, 30 years by now. But there's the kind of evil side of it. They made this thing, they knew it was more addictive than other painkillers, and then they got it into the marketplace by making the argument that it was non-addictive.
Yeah, that was their whole, it's funny to go back and you can YouTube some of the promotional videos for OxyContin or Vicodin in the early mid 90s. And oh my gosh, the lies, it is incredible. The scale of it, just complete inversion. You were exactly right. That's exactly how they sold this to everyone, was that it was non-addictive. That was the biggest selling point.
But was also part of the lies that they told to get it approved in the first place, because part of the narrative that we researched was they came up with this thing and they said, oh, it's 10 to 20 times more effective and all this. And they said, look, we've already got a problem with opioids or something like that. It was like the lie they told was a major part of getting it into the doctor's office and approved.
100%. Yeah.
So of these things I'm looking at now that we're an hour or two, is it the rare earth that contains the main topic we've been covering?
Yeah, the best earth has the voacanga in it. So that's the main thing that contains some of the iboga alkaloids. And that yes, that is the main mechanism of action. And the reishi, chaga, and chlorella is to help you physically.
What's very interesting is voacanga africana has its own. Is this a totally different plant, the voacanga?
Yeah, it grows near the iboga tree. There's a lot of plants that contain these iboga-like alkaloids around that area. Iboga is the only one that has the depth that it has in terms of its effectiveness and what it can do in terms of hallucination or spiritual experiences. But voacanga and a lot of things like it can help with people looking to replace, like we just said, things like stimulant that has a slight stimulant effect. It's very noticeable, but it's not like you had too much coffee and you're too jittery. It's just, it's perfect. I don't know how to explain it. And it lasts all day long. So, I mean, if anything was a gift from the creator, it's this group of trees is something very, very special.
I did a quick look up and it's got a very, well, similar in number of petals. You're looking at 5 petals, but it's a very interesting looking flower because there's almost sub leaves under the main leaf display where I'm counting 5. But here again, it's all about the mind from the way I currently think about these things, because it is a pure white with a very light yellow. In other words, when I see a color, I always say to myself, did black have to get added to that color or white? In other words, did it go darker or did it go lighter? And just because it went darker doesn't necessarily mean bad, but it gives me a way to frame it up. So is there, I'll be point blank, is there ibogaine anywhere here?
Growing here? Oh, I wish.
No, no, no.
I really wish.
I'm on your website, my friend.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you meant in America. On the website, no, we can't sell it because it's illegal. So that is why we use Boacanga and other things, because those aren't illegal.
Well, I'm guessing when I talk to David Avocado Wolf, I'm probably going to find out that the ayahuasca practitioners and all that, that's illegal too, you know, but there are people who know and actually use it almost openly.
That's true. I mean, I bought ayahuasca online from a website years ago, so I totally hear you.
You know, I always pay attention to search returns. When I did the search for ibogaine for a book, some of the things that came up were about the Akashic Record. Boy, now that I'm going pages in, there are a lot of books written on ibogaine. Who knew? Yeah. I guess it was just my ignorance. But what's important to get in here as we head into the second hour, James?
What's important is intention. Above all else, what do you want in your life? If you are addicted to a substance, do you really want to be free from it? Do you want to put the effort into living a good life? I think that's the whole thing with addicts. Like it's so much easier said than done. It's up to you. It's up to you. What you want is what you'll get. And I think that's been the biggest lesson of all of this for me, is to not live for myself, do what's right and watch the doors open.
It's a critical point you make. You know, I'll use the example. To me, it's almost everything in this world is about intention, and the trained ayahuasca practitioners, they are truly intending and taking actions to make it a spiritual journey, not just getting high. And consider this. So many people now smoke cannabis without too much worry in the current climate. Interestingly enough, that all started to become legal as we headed into 2020, the years preceding it. Anything they can do, you know, alcohol, pot, whatever they can do to try to keep people contented. But imagine if every time someone bought some cannabis, they said a prayer, they treated it reverently. When they used it, they laid it out in a special way. Would that in itself change the usage from I just want to get high to something else? In my mind, it would, if you did that regularly. So the intention and the state of mind, from my point of view, is a big deal. How long did it take you to quit smoking using ibogaine?
Well, it helped me like smoke half as much immediately. Immediately, I didn't want to smoke nearly as often or as much. I think it was just physical, but it took a few months, continued taking the best earth. And I eventually just started smoking one a day, half one a day, and then every other day. And then I just stopped, and I just didn't feel inclined to go. And this wasn't having a psychedelic experience or anything. This is just the best earth I was taking.
Oh, wow. So, you know, this to me speaks volumes about a spiritual intention, a spiritual decision made. And I would point out, all of my life, the idea of psilocybin, well, that's illegal. You know, that's like LSD, even though it's not, it grows out of the ground. But right now there are plenty of medications. As a matter of fact, Amanda Vollmer talked to us about microdosing psilocybin for all kinds of problems. And to me, I'm starting to come around that all the cultures that knew about these things used them effectively for a purpose that was not divorced from the natural world, which to me, by definition, is a spiritual approach. But it's odd that we've gotten to where we are, where in certain places, like I think Canada is one of them, you can get treatments with microdose psilocybin in it. As a matter of fact, I know you can. I'll leave it right there. But of all these addictions that we've laid down, I think tobacco is one of the toughest, maybe not the most dangerous. Well, unless you do it forever and too much, but alcohol, I think of all the drug problems I've seen in my life, alcohol has done more damage than any of the rest of them. And it's by far one of the toughest things to get away from because it's sold to you at every street corner.
Yeah. And I think that's the big part of the inversion. Ibogaine is a Schedule 1 while alcohol is sold next door to you. The more I learn, the more I realize that is the world we're living in. And we want to be able to navigate that world without being tugged by fleshly desires. And this is what we're trying to do. This is my ultimate goal, is help people get control using herbs. And again, like you said, Crow, if the intention's not there, then it's not going to do what it's advertised to do.
So should we talk more about other herbs that might be legal, other things people can do? I think we've definitely made the point on ibogaine, which is absolutely phenomenal. And I would actually be curious to hear if there's anything we missed on it. But is there anything else that you might be able to recommend that could help as well?
Yeah, I think kratom is great. Again, it's just a leaf that's been around forever. I think if someone wants to replace, and I've seen people take it and put it down shortly after taking it because it's here nor there for them. And benzodiazepines is such a hard drug to get off. Like opiates, the withdrawal is horrible, mentally and physically. I've seen kratom really help people with that. And I've seen them become very grateful for the leaf itself. And I've also seen them not continue taking it. It really is a bridge to somewhere else. However, if you do want to continue taking it because it's helping you and it's helping you be productive, it's helping you do what you know you should be doing, then by all means, I think that's better than any pharmaceutical or street opiate option, in my opinion. SSRIs and beta blockers, I think the best earth is super important for, and also the CBD oil. We have very potent CBD oil. So it really helps just give you kind of a peaceful state of mind without being high. And the best earth has Vokanga in it, as we were saying, which has the iboga alkaloids, and those will scrub your receptors regardless of the amount. It just won't be as intense or as impactful or as quick. But over time, in my family, what we do, because we do have people taking SSRIs, is they wean down very slowly, like Suboxone. And because fluoride and things like fluoride are such main components in these antidepressants, they're actually like the main components. That's the whole thing you're trying to get away from. You need to flush that out of your brain. You need to clear your receptors of the fluoride. So that's why Best Earth is so important for people in our family that use SSRIs. For beta blockers, we do the exact same thing, except we'd also give them hawthorn and bilberry, which is really good for your heart, because beta blockers can really mess with your heart and you want really good heart health.
For the